The first bathroom we used on tour was in the house where we played our first show. Two members of the band we played with still lived with their parents in Lombard, Illinois. They gave us clean towels that smelled like mountain spring dryer sheets. Peeling floral wallpaper curled over itself and trembled beneath the exhaust fan. The shower itself was made of peachy tile, that awful signature color of the late 80s, early 90s. It was June 18th, 2007. I avoided eye contact with my reflection in the bathroom mirror. Given the task of defining myself in a million different contexts in the upcoming weeks, I was a bundle of nerves. The band was headed west, as far out as Omaha, Nebraska, and back to Indiana via Missouri and Illinois. This would take about 2 weeks, 14 days away from my friends, my family, and my boyfriend, Tony. This tour was a practice round for post-collegiate life. We had high hopes as a band, especially on the second half of the tour. We would head east for two shows in New York City, where a representative of Island Records was waiting to meet with us. I'd been splitting my weeks between Muncie and Bloomington, Indiana, where I stayed with Tony. He was taking French classes to prepare for the Peace Corps. By the end of May, he had bought me my own toothbrush to keep at his place. I left it there for safekeeping when the band hit the road, a small attempt to leave traces of myself planted wherever I could. My duffel bag had been my constant companion that summer. In it, you could find my own shampoo, Garnier Fructis 2-in-1. It made the trip with me to every bathroom. The myriad of hygiene options presented in each strange shower were often too hard to resist, beginning with the hipster's bathroom in Milwaukee. Mint-scented organic shampoo? What would that feel like? It ended up being no thicker than the water running down my back. It seeped between my fingers and circled down the drain. Man, my hair smells so good, Gavin, our frontman, exclaimed on the bus on the way to Milwaukee. His sandy blonde coif whipped him in the face as we sped down the highway. I asked him if he had used my Garnier, which I had left in the bathroom for the rest of the band to use. No, I used that mint stuff they had. Actually, I used all four shampoos they had, and it was awesome. He paused and ran a hand through his hair. I love showering at other people's houses. They always have such cool stuff. Gavin's showers were marathons and rarely left the person who followed him with any warm water. The next day, the morning of June 20th, I took my favorite shower. We had spent the night on a farm an hour outside of Des Moines. I was the first awake and tiptoed over the sleeping bodies of my bandmates on the living room floor. The bathroom was white and had a steady, clean breeze through its lace curtain window. It gave me goosebumps under the hot water. Outside, roosters crowed, horses whinnied. I washed my hair twice. The bathroom belonged to one of our MySpace fans. She picked fresh eggs and made us breakfast. Afterward, I played Clair de Lune for her on her baby grand piano while the rest of the band got ready. I held back from calling or texting Tony too often, instead writing him letter upon letter, all of which went unsent. When the four-day break arrived, I charged down the highway in my Chevy Cavalier straight to him, wearing a white and blue dress. He greeted me open-armed in his backyard and twirled me around. Afterward, he made me dinner and sang Bob Dylan tunes. We woke up late and hungover after sharing a few bottles of wine. I was happy to discover my toothbrush right where I left it and a plastic toothbrush holder next to his sink. The 4 days passed calmly. On July 5th, he kissed me goodbye and left for his French class. By the time he returned to his apartment that evening, the band and I were well on our way. There's an art to washing your hair in a truck stop sink. Within a week, my scalp was littered with faucet-shaped bruises from attempting to soak my shoulder-length hair in shallow basins. The worst of them I received was in Richmond, Virginia, our second stop east. The doors of the bathroom stalls were something from a B-52's music video, glittered red vinyl. I was brushing my teeth when another woman walked into the bathroom. She grimaced at my foamy crest mouth and soaked head and ducked into the bathroom stall closest to the door. I rinsed off, brushed my hair, and washed my face before she flushed. 2 minutes, tops. I exited the bathroom like a bullied kid with a swirly, my pride cut in half. My wet t-shirt clung to my shoulders and back. My face was bare. We arrived in New York the early evening of July 21st. We had pinned all of our hopes on one show at the Knitting Factory the next night. A scout from Island Records would be there to see us perform. We spent the night at our friend Ruben's hallway of an apartment in Sunset Park, Brooklyn. I slept on a chair in his kitchen. Around 11 the next morning, my phone rang. It was Tony. He had big news. He had just gotten off of the phone with the Peace Corps. They had his country assignment. He would be leaving for Togo, Africa, on September 19th. My relationship officially had an expiration date. I was hollowed out. 10 hours to gather myself before the big show. We walked around New York City all day, Times Square, the Chelsea District, Greenwich Village. None of these sites committed themselves to my memory. Then showtime. The house drum kit disintegrated during our second song. The cable connecting my Wurlitzer to the PA provided nothing but feedback before giving out completely. Gavin managed to break not one, but two strings by the time we limped our way into our fifth song. It was a catastrophe. There wasn't enough PBR in the world for us to drown our sorrows in. What little band beer we did get was completely flat. We departed New York City damp, defeated, and unbathed. In New Jersey, a woman changed her daughter's diaper in a regular stall rather than use the changing station next to the sink I was using. We were the only three people in the bathroom, which was airport-sized. In her eyes, I was homeless. The stop had private bathrooms for truckers. It looked vaguely like a bathroom of a Motel 6, but without towels or sample soaps. The shower head was cheap and hosed me down with aggression. Several people tried to get into the bathroom. I studied myself in the mirror while they fiddled with the locked door handle. It was the last day of tour. I ached from each hair follicle to each toe. There were circles under my eyes. My collarbone protruded. There was a bruise the size of my heart on my upper thigh. The bruise was a direct result of my aggressive tambourining. Its bastard brothers covered my body. You could see my ribs. 10 pounds lost over the course of 2 weeks. Tony would pick me up that night. What would he think? Late that night, I lay awake next to Tony and concentrated on the blade of a ceiling fan. We had one more month before he left for Africa, but already his anxiety caused his jaw to clench in his sleep. He couldn't feel me holding him, and doing so gave me little comfort. The women in the restrooms in Virginia and New Jersey were closer to the truth than I could admit. My apartment in Muncie was sublet through the end of the month. My parents had financially cut me off. I had no job and nowhere to go once Tony took me back. I'd placed my bets on the heads of myself and six boys, musicians, without a plan for the future or ambition enough to get us anywhere. The ceiling fan made me nauseous. I got up for a glass of water and studied my fading frame beneath one of Tony's old wrestling team tees. I took it off and drew a shower. It was 3 a.m. My bag with my shampoo and body wash was still in the trunk of his Camry. I reached for the shampoo that hung from the shower head and braced my eyes against the falling water.